me the nod anyway, for the same reason that she'd snapped up Louis César. Daddy Dearest had promised her that I'd vote the way she wanted. And with a bunch of new senators on board, and not all of her choosing, and with rival consuls and their entourages flooding in to discuss the war, and with everybody watching her every move, just waiting for a chance to replace her as the newly appointed leader of the vampire world, well, even a Domfeer's support had started to look pretty good. Of course, I could have declined the offer, and the Mack truck of excrement probably headed toward the fan of my life as a result. But the family had needed help, Louis César had needed an ally, and I had kind of wanted to go on living. Something that wasn't likely if the Fae flooded through a bunch of illegal portals and murdered us all. So I'd said okay. I just hadn't stopped to wonder how a chick who'd spent most of her life as a pariah, scrounging up a living on the fringes of vamp society, was supposed to fit in at the Court of Courts, where people were tipped in gold. "You're going to need some friends, too," Louis César told me, as if he'd been following my thoughts. And the next thing I knew, my hands were full of coins. Old ones, with a smirking guy on the front with a big nose and a wig. And before I could respond to that, a roar went up, one that made the former bedlam sound like a day at the park and seemed to be coming from directly overhead. I looked up and promptly forgot everything else. "Holy shit," I thought, caught flat-footed for the second time in one night. We had reached the ruined lobby, which was a working sea of people below, and above was Crazy Town. It was also mostly missing. The fire damage hadn't looked that bad from outside, where the sturdy exterior walls had masked the carnage within, but now I could see that the entire center was gutted, as if it had acted like a chimney, pulling the fire up and out, and leaving us staring at 15 floors of mostly open space, bisected by half-fallen girders and ropes of electrical lines forming a giant echo chamber. And it had plenty to echo. Hordes of spectators were clustered in working knots on the floors that could still support their weight, jostling for space on the cracked and burnt remains of people's apartments. Thousands had already beaten us to the punch, staking out prime spots while we were goofing off outside, and now they were shouting and stomping their feet and banging on things, which I didn't think was too smart considering the state of this place, and which was sending siftings of black ash down like evil snow, covering everything in drifts of soot nobody cared about, because the fight was about to begin. Although where it was, I had no idea. I didn't see anything that even vaguely resembled a ring, or so much as a cordoned-off section of floor. Of course, it was possible that it was buried somewhere under the massive crowd, which covered every square inch of the lobby, and seemed to want ours, too, judging by the amount of abuse we were taking.
"Dari!"
I somehow heard the shout, which seemed to be coming from a towering pile of ruined furniture by a wall. There were some more stalls over there, the usual T-shirts, hats, and water bottles, and one selling nothing but flashlights in all shapes and sizes, along with ropes of batteries and garlic string-like bunches festooned everywhere. I almost bought one. It was gloomy as shit in here. Which was why I couldn't tell who was calling me.
"Dari!"
I finally noticed that the spray painter had been at work here, too, with neon green arrows flickering in the scattered torchlight, high on smoky black walls. They pointed the way to everything from booze to food to areas designated as toilets that I didn't want to know any more about, to a dripping line that said merely, "Finn." There was no further explanation offered, but then one wasn't needed. The hoi polloi of bookmakers might have set up outside, in the mud and muck, and managed to nab some business. But those in the know had bypassed them, because they knew better odds were to be found within. They knew to look for Finn. And sure enough, the face peering at me over the side of the furniture pile was familiar. It was also full of nose, because Finn was of the troll persuasion. But unlike the mountain variety, who sort of resembled their namesake. He was an itty-bitty forest troll, one with a serious admiration for Olga. And no, I didn't know how that worked, but I assumed it was the reason he was beckoning us over. Finn usually operated his business out of his bar, where you could get a bet down on anything from human and non-human sports to how fast a spider could traverse a girder. Finn covered it all, and had a rep for paying up promptly when he lost, which was probably why his makeshift perch looked like it was being besieged. We fought our way through to him anyway, using the bears as battering ram and buffer in one, which allowed us to reach the bottom of the pile more or less intact.
"Been trying to reach you all day," Finn yelled,
while continuing to accept money and write slips.
"You kill another phone, or what?"
I held it up.
"Got it on me."
"Well, turn it on once in a while. I got news."
"A job?"
I yelled, because Finn had been known to shoot work my way. And while I didn't think moonlighting was normal for a senator, neither was starvation. And nobody had bothered to mention before I took my shiny new Senate job that it didn't come with a salary. A girl needed to get paid.
"No, a warning."
He made a disgruntled sound and handed the bookmaking off to his senior associate and clambered down the mountain, although not all the way. He found a perch that left him approximately chest high on Olga, which seemed to be a view he liked, because he simpered at her while she gazed around the lofty space above us, probably searching for the albino. I poked him.
"What warning?"
"There's a rumor going around. Some of my competition are already given odds."
"On what?"
"On how long you'll last."
"What?"
I felt like I was saying that a lot tonight. Finn nodded.
"I'm not taking them, of course. Us being friends and all, but others."
He broke off, eyeing the gleaming stash I was still clutching.
Of course, if you want to get a bet down on something else, I can..."
"Finn!"
I pushed the gold at Louis César, who indicated with a grin that his hands were full of bear. Bastard. So I shoved it in my pocket for the moment.
"What are you talking about?"
"Just that you're a senator now, and nobody saw that coming."
"So they think I'm gonna get fired?"
"Nah, they think you're gonna get dead,"
he yelled, because some enthusiastic drumming had started from somewhere behind us, loud enough to tear through the din and my head. I glanced around to see a bunch of trolls emerging from a room across the lobby. They were threading their way ponderously through the crowd, not that they had to work too hard. Everyone was practically trampling one another to get out of the way. I didn't blame them. They were the biggest damned trolls I'd ever seen. The nearest was what I called Shadow on a Rock, a mostly gray skin tone with purplish highlights in the crevasses, and had to be at least 12 feet tall. He had a torso like the Hulk's and arms thicker around than Olga's entire body. I'd never thought of her as a dainty, sylph-like creature before, but if these were what full-grown male trolls looked like, I was revising my opinion, and he was one of the smaller ones. The biggest was fortunate that the ceiling was mostly missing, because the bits that remained were well below chin height, and that was despite the lobby having had a vaulted ceiling. He was a colossus with sun-kissed mountain range skin, mostly indigo with a scattering of orange-copper highlights. They gleamed in the torchlight, along with a map of scars, some new and vivid, some old and stretched, scrawling across the massive chest and back and arms, advertising just how many of these contests he'd already survived. I licked my lips uneasily. I thought the duo living in my basement were big, but I now recognized them for what they were, scrawny adolescents, and understood a little better why Olga had wanted an entire truckload of backup. Not that we were looking so formidable, all of a sudden. There seemed to be two groups, distinguished by the red or blue bandanas they wore on bulging biceps, or, more likely, repurposed tablecloths, because just look at them. Most of the crowd didn't even come up to their waists, including some of our garden variety green-brown boys, while some of the smaller beings scuttling around were in danger of being turned into a greasy spot with one misplaced step. I didn't see anybody get crushed, but one obviously drunken ogre a few stories above us threw a bottle and had the good aim, or bad luck, to have it bounce off the biggest guy's head. I doubt it hurt. The rock-hard cranium was encased in a helmet it didn't need. But I guess it made him mad, because a split second later, maybe 1,500 pounds of muscle had jumped up, grabbed the offender, and landed back on the tile, with enough force to shudder it under our feet and to crack it around his giant ones. And then he casually flicked the guy through a wall. It looked like that was what the crowd had been waiting for, because they started roaring and stomping even harder than before, giving every impression of enjoying the pre-game show. I barely noticed. I was too busy wondering if maybe I couldn't see a ring because we were standing in it, and how it might be a good plan to, you know, get out, which was what everybody else appeared to be doing. The groaning stairways were suddenly flooded with people trying to get to higher levels and crushing us against the wall in the process.
"Are you listening to me?"
Finn demanded, as even Olga ended up hugging Brick.
"No,"
I breathed, and doubted he heard it. But he must have seen it because the wrinkled forehead acquired another one.
"Dory, I'm trying to tell you that you're in danger."
"No shit," I said, as the trolls started scaling the burnt brick, pulling themselves up ruined floor after ruined floor, until the blue and red teams were facing each other, not on the ground, but on the walls. And finally I understood. The fight, a free-for-all between a dozen massive guys on each side, was to take place in the demolished open space in the center of the building, up and down 15 stories as combatants leapt and dove and swung through open air, getting assists from a few dangling ropes the showrunners had provided, while dodging the pots and pans, broken bottles, and burnt ragged-edged table legs many of the fans were wielding, which they clearly planned to use to help their favorite team by clobbering the hell out of the other guys.
"Interesting," Luis Cesar said, his eyes shining.
"Because he was insane. Like Finn, apparently, who had leaned over to grab me and yell something in my ear."
"What?"
"Warn you. Word on the streets. See?"
"I can't hear you."
"Hurt. Want. Seat."
"What seat? It's standing room only."
Finn was starting to look frustrated, but not nearly as much as I was, because how were we supposed to find anybody in this? We'd be lucky to avoid getting pancaked by a falling troll. Like, really lucky, I thought, staring upward at thousands of pounds of muscle hanging off barely holding together walls as a sound like a thousand trumpets pealed through the air, loud enough to make me actually nauseous, and to drown out whatever the hell Finn was yelling.
"I don't want a damned chair," I told him, ears ringing, as I tried to pry him off.
Which should have been easy, because forest trolls are a lot less butch than their mountain counterparts. Only this one was determined. And now he was shaking me, and screaming in my already wounded ear.
"Not a chair, a seat. They want your Senate seat."
I frowned at him.
"What? Who does?"
"Hello."
It was the girl with the purple hair and the catsuit, appearing out of nowhere and giving me a little wave. And the next thing I knew, I was flying. Chapter 4. For a moment, everything was darkness and disorientation and the disturbing feeling of no longer being properly attached to Earth, and thunderous noise, because the crowd was on all sides now, since I'd just been thrown something like 3 stories straight up, and flipped head over heels in the process, to the point that I only knew where I was by the torches burning in the lobby below, a ring of fire slinging around me as I tumbled through space, getting farther away by the second. Gravity being a thing, I fully expected to be reacquainted with them shortly when I hit the floor in a puddle of used-to-be dumb fear. And maybe I would have, except that I hit the side of a moving mountain first, to whom I clung like a limpet, because literally all I could see were thrashing bodies and flailing fists, all of which were bigger than my head. Way bigger. And aimed at us, I realized. Team Immovable Object and Team Irresistible Force were meeting with a crash like two freight trains coming together, with me in the middle. Because I'd happened to catch hold of the big boy, whom everybody seemed to agree had an unfair advantage. So they were trying to take him out first. Half of the opposing team jumped him, most of them having already found weapons consisting of whatever the fire had spared. Kitchen knives, heavy pieces of furniture, and what appeared to be part of a solid steel girder all came at us at the same time, causing my ride to do a 360 flip in midair, coming off the wall and going straight up, amazingly fast and balletic for someone his size, leaving the would-be attackers to crash into the wall below. "All right," I breathed, grinning in shock and relief as we righted again, on a broken ledge another story up. "All right, yeah!" Which, in retrospect, wasn't the best idea, because troll hearing works a lot better than troll eyesight, and Big Blue realized he had a hitchhiker, and flicked me off his shoulder like an annoying insect, one headed straight at the opposite wall, which was about to serve as a fly swatter. But I wasn't a fly, and I grabbed one of the hanging ropes in passing, somehow getting my knees up and my feet out. I managed to push off from the wall instead of splatting onto it, and ended up right back in the thick of things. The next few seconds were a kaleidoscope of impressions more than thoughts, because I didn't have time for thoughts. Bodies were tumbling, bricks were flying, blood was spurting. Green. Oh, good. And I was getting smacked around by both sides because I couldn't see well enough to find a way out. But not because of a lack of light. The battleground had started off gloomy, with a little moonlight above and some scattered torches below, but it hadn't stayed that way. As soon as the fun began, the flashlights turned on, masses of them, and started waving around everywhere like a thousand tiny spotlights because everyone seemed to have one. It reminded me of people holding up lighters at a concert. Only these lighters were extra powerful and were glinting off everything. Ruined metal and broken glass and tiny angry troll eyes, whose owners were probably pissed that they had to fight half-blind. Which was why they were going on movement, Dory. I finally realized why I was drawing so much attention swinging around on my little rope, probably looking like a flying fist even as I tried to avoid them. And the bottles and bricks and unidentifiable junk the crowd was pelting us with. Until I got smart and jumped for a piece of somebody's living room, draped with fallen shag carpeting that gave me a decent handhold. At least it did until I pulled an ancient TV off the edge. It was built in a cabinet like a piece of furniture, and would have taken me out or at least down, only a nearby troll grabbed it first, and flung it at an opponent's head, catching my rope in the process and sending me hurtling across the gap, straight at a bunch of humans crowding somebody's bathtub. Oh, thank God, I thought, reaching for them gratefully, only to have them shove me right back out again, waving beer bottles and cheering. Assholes! I yelled, but nobody heard. On the bright side, the shove sent me spinning across the void toward another possible perch, a broken piece of hallway that nobody had claimed, maybe because it was no longer connected to anything on either side. But I wasn't coming from the side, I was coming head on, and I managed to catch it. With my stomach. It hurt like a bitch, but so am I, and I snarled and clambered on top. And then just lay there, breathing hard because it felt like I'd broken a rib. It still did when I rolled over a moment later and peered past the edge, trying to take stock. It wasn't easy. The fight had already spread out, with two fallen colossi in the now mostly vacated lobby, and two more battling it out on the floor around them, throwing up huge drifts of soot in the process. Everybody else was tearing through the various stories, raining down bricks and dust and debris, which, with the strobe lighting from the damned flashlights, made it hard to see anything. but I nonetheless managed to glimpse a smear of pink far below. And then Louis César on one side of the lobby. He had a torch in one hand and a piece of rebar in the other, and was holding off an even dozen vamps while still draped in three grinning sidekicks. Because it looked like Bitch Girl hadn't come alone. It also looked like her backup was a little worried about the bears. Like, why Louis César hadn't felt it necessary to set them down. Or maybe they'd heard rumors of the crazy swordsman with the old-world manners who would apologize if he stepped on your foot in a fight right before he gutted you. But it was more likely going to be the other way around this time, because he was distracted, his eyes flickering constantly upward. Looking for me, I realized. "I'm okay," I yelled, waving both arms, and saw a brief flash of teeth. Right before he was swamped by the whole crew at once, who weren't politely waiting to duel him one at a time like in the movies. They never do. Crap. I started looking for a landing spot that my rope might reach, only to realize that it wasn't a rope. I had grabbed for one, but in the darkness I'd found something else, something that spit and sizzled like a downed electric cable. Maybe because it was a downed electric cable. Shit! And then purple hair popped up over the side of my impossible-to-reach perch like freaking Spider-Man. I blinked at her. "How the hell did you get up here?" I demanded. "Miss me?" She flashed some fang. "No," I said, and stuck the cable to her chest. Okay, that worked better than expected, I thought, watching her slam back into the void like she'd been hit by a giant fist, and then get smashed between two of them when she sailed straight into the middle of a troll fight. I winced. That had to hurt. And then the cable suddenly coiled around and hissed at me, like some huge black snake. An image that was only reinforced when it started striking down, sparking off brick and plaster and part of a twisted girder, as I ducked and dodged and cursed vampire master powers, the fun stuff they get with advanced age but which I'd managed to miss out on. At least I know how she managed that throw, I thought, wrestling with the damned thing, and finally managing to loop it around a girder, and tie it off in half a dozen knots until it just stayed there flailing helplessly. Like me, when a roundhouse kick came out of nowhere and sent me sailing. Son of a bitch! I landed in a rug-burn-inducing slide in a soot-covered apartment somewhere below, one stuffed to the gills with ogres who didn't appreciate the intrusion. Between the pots and pans and somebody's floor lamp they started pelting me with, it took me a second to notice that my assailant's hair was now blonde and short, and that she seemed to have changed sexes. "Who the hell are you?" I asked, staring up at the new guy. "A dead man," he told me, which was accurate considering the fangs, but weird. Or maybe not, I thought, as he suddenly staggered backward into the abyss, and I realized that he hadn't been the one speaking. "Competition?" I guessed, as purple hair grinned at me some more. "Competition," she agreed. And then she lunged. But I'd expected it, and got a frying pan up in time, slamming it into her pretty face. It didn't cave it in, exactly, but I had the impression that her features might be a lot flatter once it came off. I decided not to find out and kicked her over the edge. For anyone else, that would have been it. But anyone else would have already been dead from electrocution. So it wasn't entirely a surprise to see some purple-tipped talons grasp the edge of the floor a couple seconds later, although how their owner managed that I didn't know unless she jackknifed in space. But at least she was looking a little worse for the wear, with her hair a crackling nimbus around her perfectly made-up and now blood-smeared face. Not that it seemed to be slowing her down. I had gotten back to my feet, but before I could blink, my ankle was caught, my butt hit the floor, and the only reason I didn't go over the edge was the couple of large ogres I'd managed to grab on the way down, and the fact that I was slamming my boot into her head as hard as I could. "Out of curiosity," I panted, while one of the ogre's friends started wailing on me with a toaster. "Is there a reason you and Blondie both showed up tonight?" She spat blood. "You're a hard person to find.
You get appointed to the Senate, then immediately get sent out of the country.
And yeah, the Senate had had a couple errands for me, one of which had resulted in my current less than optimal state. But I didn't see what that had to do with her.
So? So we didn't know where you went and had to wait for you to get back, and now there's only a week left.
Until what?
Until the swearing in, she said,
getting smacked by a determined little guy with a broom handle.
Once you're confirmed, no one can touch you until after the war. And by then, you'll have made alliances.
I vaguely remembered somebody telling me that duels between senators had been outlawed until after the war, to cut down on the chaos. And because I guess the consul felt like she'd lost enough Senate members already. But we newbies weren't technically senators yet, were we?
So this is going to be an all-week thing? I guessed.
Oh, trust me. The annoying smirk was back. It won't take nearly that long.
I was beginning to think she might be right, because she was somehow managing to drag me, the two ogres I'd latched onto, and what appeared to be their whole clan, all of whom were now holding on to them, with some even bracing in the doorway, toward the precipice. And that was while I did my utmost to punch a hole through that stupid grin. And I wasn't the only one.
"Die, bitch,"
Blondie said, coming to the rescue despite having her stake still sticking out of his chest.
"How are you guys getting up here?"
I asked, but didn't get an answer, because a passing troll fight swept them and a third of the room away, and would have dragged me off too if the ogres hadn't jerked their relatives back just in time and taken me with them.
"Hey, thanks,"
I said sincerely, staggering back to my feet, and had the whole room charge at me at once. I had a split second to spot a rope or end up plunging through space without one. But between the fighting and the dust and the disco ball on acid effect of the flashlights, that wasn't easy. But I thought I glimpsed something off to the left and leapt for it, hoping it wasn't another live wire. I never found out. However, I did find out how the vamps were all but levitating around when I went rocketing toward the roof. It took me a second to realize that I'd landed on the broad back of a troll, who was too busy chasing a blue team member up the wall to notice. And judging by the level of enthusiasm, I really didn't want to be there when he caught him. Not that that was likely to be a problem, I realized, when somebody jumped off another passing titan and grabbed me.
"Would you get a life?"
I gritted, watching Purple Hair wrestle with my boot.
"Trying to,"
she told me indistinctly while I slammed my heel into her face some more. I am not a weakling, and I was motivated, but it didn't seem to be making much of an impression. Of course, I could be wrong, I thought, as a side table, a keyboard, and a lazy boy came flying out of the apartments we were passing as if pulled by a string. Or by a determined master vampire who wanted to give me something else to think about. And she wasn't short on ammo. A bunch of tumbled bricks came streaming at me a second later, like a machine gun spewing huge, rough-edged bullets, half of which were hitting my freaking ribs. Even worse, the barrage seemed to have given my ride's opponent an idea, because we were suddenly being pelted by a ton of stuff from above as he tried to slow us down, including the burnt-out remains of a fridge he'd grabbed out of somebody's kitchen and was about to...
Okay, yeah.
I stopped pummeling and twisted, hanging off Troll Boy's bandana by one arm, getting ready. And to her credit, Purple Hair wasn't stupid. I saw her eyes widen and her hands fumble for weapons she'd so far ignored, right before my leg muscles bunched and my knees snapped, and she was caught into the path of the fridge, still flailing. People can say all they want about Babe Ruth, but that troll was the real MVP, wielding that thing like a bat and sending her up, up, and all the way out, through the non-existent roof and into the moonlit sky beyond. Hitting a home run if ever I saw one.
Heh,
I said because it was funny, and because I never learn. Suddenly, I had a very unhappy troll's face in mine, a chair-sized hand snatching me off his back, and a wall coming at me too fast to do anything about. This time the fly swatter connected. A moment later, I was bleary-eyed and barely conscious, scrambling to find a handhold on the rough old bricks. And I did. I found plenty, because the wall had been seriously charred here, which left it jagged and broken, with any number of potential grips. Unfortunately, it also left it soft and brittle, and pieces of it kept breaking off under my hands. My head jerked about, looking for alternatives, but all I saw were ominous cracks racing off for yards in every direction, and the concrete slab of the lobby floor way too far away to be survivable, and Luis César looking up, surrounded by a circle of bodies, fear and horror dawning on his face, and a lump in my pocket that one of my flailing hands brushed against, and that I vaguely realized was the gold he had given me. Gold! A moment later, the whole section of wall crumbled to pieces, and I fell into wind and light and noise, with no ropes, no jutting bits of hallway, and no passing giants to the rescue. Just a glittering line of coins racing ahead of me, pattering down on the floor below like golden rain, and a flood of small something surging out of the dark, scrabbling for them greedily before looking up, and seeing me speeding at them like a Damphir-shaped bullet. Suddenly, the whole echoing tower of crazy sounded like the world's biggest popcorn popper going off, which is why I hit down, not on a hard concrete subfloor, but on a sea of rubbery, bouncy, inflatable somethings, most of which were still trying to spot the coins in the soot, and battering me this way and that, sending me bouncing around like a drunk chick in a ball pit, one whose boyfriend came to grab her out of the air a second later and drag her against his chest, yelling something inaudible because the room had suddenly gone crazy. But not because of us. "Well, shit," I said distinctly, staring upward. Right before, we were buried under a couple thousand pounds of falling muscle. "Damn, I knew that was going to happen," I thought, and passed out. Chapter 5. Not surprisingly, I dreamed of trolls. Not big ones, but normal-sized, even a little puny, watching me with tiny eyes blown wide with fear as I tore past, raking backhoe amounts of bricks out of walls and carving the old building into my personal ladder. I couldn't see well, just smears of light that sometimes dazzled, sometimes blinded, when they shone directly into my eyes. And I could barely hear, the surrounding walls reflecting back every sound, from my hoarse breathing to the deafening cheers of the crowd. Didn't matter. I could sense my prey ahead, could smell him. An oil slick of a scent, partly the result of whatever he used on his hair, partly him. A little man, a frightened man, a bully, as slavers always were. This would be easy. I smelled the others as well, the ones I'd come with, racing up what remained of the stairs nearby. Because they had spotted him, too. They were faster than I'd expected, these ponderous-looking creatures, but they had to throw the people blocking the stairs out of the way and deal with the man-servants, whom he'd left behind to slow their pursuit. I didn't, and while he might be fast enough to avoid them, he was no match for me, a fact he seemed to realize when we reached the roof, him bursting out of a stairwell and me vaulting through the tattered opening the fire had provided at almost the same time. He was panicked. I could smell it in his sweat, hear it in the labored breaths he was taking, glimpse it in those pale eyes. But not enough. Not like one who had seen his death and has no way to avoid it. That look I was intimately familiar with. The pallor of the skin, the slump of shoulders, the resignation that sets in seconds before any damage is done because they know it's coming. It was absent this time. There was something wrong. I glanced around, but with the limitations of this borrowed body, it was difficult to tell if he had reinforcements. It was dark, with most of the light below us now, a moving lattice etching the night that did little to dispel the gloom this far up. And there was nothing in the air that I could scent, except soot and smog and exhaust, the acrid burn of asphalt still warm from the day, and a soothing gleam of rain beyond. And his weapons, a metallic taste on my tongue that shouted a warning, not that it mattered. His toys couldn't hurt me, but something else might. I threw myself to the side, hitting concrete a second before a wall of energy spiraled out of nowhere, tearing across the roofline right where I had been standing. It would have been exhilarating in my old body, a roaring finger of power searing the night right overhead. But in this one, it was a problem. The electric flood from the portal had frightened my avatar as the battle had not, the strange light searing his small eyes, the strange smell filling his nostrils. It wasn't Fae, it wasn't human, it wasn't anything he knew, and it was everywhere, leaving him scent as well as sight blind, with no senses he could trust. It made the huge body huddle and cringe, and swamped the mind with panic, always the hardest emotion to see through. He began fighting me, desperate to get away, to get anywhere that felt familiar. And in the few seconds it took for me to reassure him, the slaver was gone. The portal winked out of existence as quickly as it had come, allowing the blue-black darkness of the city to close over our head again. I pulled us back to our feet, reeling from the troll's surging emotions and the fury of my own. Because the slaver could be anywhere now. From another point on Earth, perhaps thousands of miles away, to another realm altogether, if this portal connected to Fairy. I had failed. So why could I still smell him? I growled, a low thread of anger that matched the troll's changing feelings. His fear was receding as rage took its place, that the creature he so hated had made him cower and cringe once again, and gotten away. To a place where he'd do it to others, the way he always did, the way he always had. I had a sudden flood of memories, not mine, but vivid just the same. The hulk I was inhabiting once small and frightened, his young wrists scarred from shackles he couldn't break, his child ribs showing through the scraps of clothing he wore, yet being forced to fight nonetheless. Because if he did not, the rod came, the tip of which felt like fire. It hurt, it burned, and eventually, if used enough, it killed. So he fought, even though he knew his role wasn't that of victor. He was to be loaned out to battles as one of the bodies carried away at the end of the night, to give the crowd the blood it craved, yet spare the better combatants, the ones who chose to be there, as he did not. Yet again and again, they were the ones carried away, and he remained, battle-scarred and seething, growing larger than them all and waiting for his chance. Not to live, he had nothing left to go back to. He didn't even know where they had found him, who his people were, didn't even know his true name. Only the one they had given him, Magdar. It meant cudgel in some earth tongue, and that was all he'd ever been. What did he know of life? No, his plan wasn't escape, but to do what he'd been trained to do, to kill. This slaver, the one who owned him now, the others who had had him before, until he became too much to handle. These slavers, the two who had taken him from his home, who had ripped him from his mother's arms, who had dragged him screaming through a portal, into this never-ending nightmare. Killers, abusers, desecrators. He would have them. He would have them all. And I will help you, I promised, while scenting the air, drawing in great bushels full at a time, filling the great chest. And no, I hadn't been wrong. I could still smell him, and not just the residue his presence had left behind, but him, although distant now, indistinct, and getting more so by the second. We let out a roar and leapt across the roof to the side facing the parking lot. With the distance and these eyes, I couldn't make out much, even with the lot lights spearing the darkness. But I could see movement, and a slim, pale shape weaving among the cars, because that portal hadn't gone to Fairy, had it? It had let out somewhere near the bottom of this building, like an emergency slide without the slide, and now our prey was getting away. And I couldn't catch him like this. Your shackles are gone, I reminded the other. Come find me when this is over, and we will hunt again. I felt the nod, the way I had when I'd made my initial offer. And then the disorientation of a mental flight hit me, a thousand minds crowding in from all sides all at once. overwhelming, exhausting, thrilling, until I burst free of the building and soared into the night. I didn't have much time, and not only because of the slaver. I couldn't hold free flight for long. I had to have an avatar, and soon. But there were far fewer options out here. There were some vendors cleaning up and getting ready for another onslaught after the fight. There were a few drunks under tables and slumped in tents, too far gone to care about the night's revelries. There was a bag lady with her little cart who had wandered in through the unwatched gate because its keepers had snuck away to the fights, and who was now staring around, her mouth hanging open. None of which could help me. But he could. The troll my twin had sent to watch her weapons was sitting in the cab of our truck. The door was open, because there wasn't enough room for him to be comfortable inside, even with the seat all the way back. He was therefore sitting sideways, one huge leg bent over the other to bring his foot up to his face, so he could pick at his toes. These creatures would have fascinated me another time. How clear, how clean their minds were, with none of the anxiety, the constant worry, the thousand pesky thoughts even a dull-witted human had running in the background all the time. This one was simply thinking about his toe, and the splinter that had somehow wedged itself into the tender flesh around his cuticle. He was perfect. And a moment later, he was straightening up, was twisting around in the driver's seat, was grasping the wheel, and was then just sitting there, because neither of us knew how to drive. I cursed, and felt his apology. He wanted to help. "Not your fault," I told him, and then cursed again, the deep sound echoing around the cab as the albino sped past us in a red sports car, one that screamed its way out of the lot a moment later, but we had no way to follow. The troll didn't know what to do, and my twin's mind was still unconscious, buried under a couple of fallen combatants. Even had I been willing to risk direct contact, she couldn't help me. Damn it! Someone knocked on the door of the cab. I looked out and saw the bag lady from before, hanging off the side of the truck, gripping the mirror, and looking more than a little disturbed. She was babbling and pointing back the way we'd come, as if trying to tell somebody about the madness she had just witnessed. Until her bleary eyes caught mine, and she registered who it was exactly she was talking to. She jumped down, surprisingly spry for her age, and took off, her shopping cart speeding in front of her. But I caught her mind. Interesting. And made an offer. Not a demand. Such things were difficult and dangerous if the unwilling one was about to be piloting a few tons of racing metal. But no such pressure was needed. I saw her slow, saw her shoulders twitch, saw the question in her mind, and knew the answer. She looked back, the fear in her eyes suddenly replaced by something else. And then I was sliding over to the passenger side, and she was scrambling into the cab. She was a strange-looking creature, with half-smoked cigarettes sticking out of her frowzled gray afro in a dozen places, patched skirts bunched up around her wrinkled knees, and the smell of alcohol on her breath. "I really shouldn't be driving," she told me conversationally as the engine turned over. "I drink, you know." "Hit the gas," I growled, and we took off, the truck lurching ahead from a dead stop and then screeching around a corner. It had taken us only a moment to get going, but our vehicle was slow, and with the slaver's head start, I was afraid we would be too late. But then I saw him up ahead, stopped at a red light, because humans are creatures of habit even when running for their lives. Until he saw us, coming up fast behind him, and shot ahead, barreling through the intersection and getting clipped by a truck in the process. It spun him around, but didn't do much to slow him down. But the few seconds it took for him to get oriented brought us some useful time. The trolls we had come with had seen his flight as well, and had rushed down the length of the building, emerging on the sidewalk at a lumbering run as we shot past, and then stopped on a dime, my huge borrowed arm sticking out of the window to beckon them forward. They got in. The truck sagged with their weight, making it even slower than before, but I wanted backup in case he was leading us to some of his own. And then the light changed, and we went charging forward, the gas pedal all the way down because our driver had a crazy gleam in her eyes. Maybe she really shouldn't be driving, I thought. Too late. but it seemed to be working, and the added weight ensured that we did not, in fact, end up on three wheels when she took a corner at a somewhat startling speed.
"Ha-ha!"
she said, cackling and rocking back and forth, the crazy eyes full-blown now.
"Watch the road," I grumbled, and she nodded vigorously.
And to be fair, while we plowed through a mailbox, a light pole, and part of a florist shop, we did not lose the red car. I couldn't see the slaver too well in this guise, but when I slipped briefly into the old woman's mind, I saw him glance at us over his shoulder, his eyes huge, and one of his long, white hands gripping the steering wheel, while the other...
"Gun!"
the woman and I said together, as the first bullet tore through the windshield, cracking it all at once.
"Gun, gun, 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 gun,"
she informed me, as we started slinging around the road, as if she were trying to dodge the bullets.
"Stay on target,"
I growled, slipping back into the one called Sten, and starting to climb out of the door when someone tapped us on the shoulder. I looked back, and the red-haired troll woman draped something over my head. When I looked down again, my borrowed body had transformed into that of a bulky human male with hairy arms, as had those of the trolls in the back of the truck, who could have been my brothers by appearance, yet were staring at me oddly.
"Thank you,"
I rumbled.
"We talk later,"
she said, and gave me a push. Sten and I finished our transition to the hood of our vehicle and paused to judge the distance. He seemed to think we could make it, and he was proved right when we leapt from the front of our vehicle and smashed down onto the roof of the small red car. It had already been low to the ground and was now sending up sparks as we slung around another corner, because the glamoury the woman had provided did nothing to change bulk, and Sten was well-fed. But not well enough.
"Slow him more,"
Sten told me, and sent a visual of us hanging off the back of the car, digging in our heels.
"Better way,"
I told him back, and plunged our hand through the flimsy car top, ripping it open like a can and leaving the albino exposed. He didn't seem to like that, judging by the amount of bullets suddenly hitting us, which didn't penetrate even at this distance, but which hurt Sten the way bee stings would hurt a human, and caused him to put one of his huge hands in front of our eyes to protect them. And before I could explain to him that I couldn't kill something I couldn't see, the car had raced around a curve and plunged down a hill, jittering and juddering as if we were no longer on a road. Because we weren't, I realized, as Sten parted two huge fingers enough to show us a construction site, which the albino had turned the car into, one crowded with equipment and silvered with moonlight, which was why I could see anything at all, but not in time. A large girder dangling from a crane came out of nowhere and hit us in the head, sweeping us off the back of the car as the albino tore underneath, and almost causing us to be run over by our own support team, who were right behind. But the bag lady saw us and swerved, sending the truck flying up a dirt ramp and sailing over our heads, and over the albino's. He had taken another ramp, this one going down into the ditch that was going to be the foundation of the new building someday, and abruptly realized that he had no way out except back the way he'd come, which was why he'd just spun around. In time to see the huge truck, heavy in its own right, and now also loaded down with troll, come hurtling at him off the edge. I assume he did not see it hit down since it landed directly on top of him and the little red car. The crunch was satisfying. After a moment, Sten got back to his feet and lumbered to the edge of the ditch.
"Olga, all right,"
he observed, watching her and the rest of the trolls climb out of the ruined truck and get some distance. "Yes," I agreed.
"Slaver? Could be,"
he added, sounding less sure. And then abruptly stepped back when the car went up, the explosion big enough to engulf both vehicles in a ball of fire and a column of billowing black smoke.
"Maybe not,"
he conceded. I sent the image to Magdar, along with the sounds and smells and memories of the chase.
"One,"
he sent back. I smiled. Chapter 6. I woke up in a bed that smelled of butterscotch. My favorite flavor, I thought, stretching. and rolled onto something muscle hard and skin soft that was taking up most of my bed. Like warm candy, I thought, my lips finding a nipple. Strong hands gripped my waist.
You aren't up to this,
Luis Cesar's voice informed me. Neither are you, but give me a minute. I went back to the candy. Until I was rolled over, which should have been pleasurable, but which, surprisingly, was not.
Ow,
I said, my ribs protesting vocally.
I told you.
I opened my eyes to find a curtain of auburn hair falling on either side of my face, my favorite blue eyes looking down at me in concern, and my hands caught above my head to keep them out of trouble. Damn, he knew I liked that. It made for a challenge. The blue eyes took on a rueful gleam, and the delicious chest moved back, just out of reach.
I'm serious, he informed me. Doctor's orders.
Tom Fear, I reminded him. Don't need a doctor, unless he's Dr. Love. That got me a burst of laughter and an eye roll, because Luis Cesar seemed to like it when I was silly, especially when I was naked and silly. I slid along underneath him and watched those gorgeous eyes catch fire. I'd never known blue could burn before I met him, I thought, right before warm lips caught mine. And yes, they were very nice lips, and a very nice tongue, and very nice teeth, nipping at me gently. I wrapped my legs around him because that was more like it, and suddenly found myself vertical, with hard hands under my butt and strong legs carting me off somewhere, which turned out to be the bathroom. I can work with this, I decided, as my backside came to rest on the countertop. He leaned over to start the shower, and I enjoyed a view of the world's greatest ass for a moment, and then the world's greatest chest when he stood back up, which was nice to look at, but even nicer to rest my head against, the skin-to-skin contact just so damned good. Warm like the bed had been, and the shower would be, in half an age because the ancient water heater took its time. Not that I minded, I thought drowsily, my hands sliding over intriguing dips and valleys, and then spazzing out when I was suddenly drenched by a warm waterfall.
What?
I choked, staring around wildly at the inside of my bath. It looked the way it always did, cracked blue and white tile on the walls, fat old porcelain fixtures on the clawfoot tub, eyelet shower curtain billowing out because my roommate had decorated the place and she's a girly girl. And because of the steam. The shower was hot.
How did you do that?
I asked Luis Cesar, who had turned me around to soap up my back.
Do what?
He murmured, as I braced my hands on the tile and wondered, what the hell? The water. I struggled to think past the rhythmic soothing of those calloused hands. It's hot.
Isn't it supposed to be?
Yes, but not now. It takes forever.
Almost 15 minutes, he agreed. You need a new, what do they call it? The device that heats the water.
A water heater, and no, I don't. I need to know what's going on. I twisted around because all the stroking was making my brain fuzzy, and I needed to be sharp right now. Luis Cesar's forehead wrinkled slightly.
I am helping you to bathe. The doctor said it would relieve some of your stiffness.
Not about that, about the time.
What time?
The wrinkle was starting to deepen. You just said we've been in here 15 minutes. He nodded.
About that? Why?
Because I don't remember them. I don't remember any of them. I stared around, suddenly feeling trapped. It felt like the curtains were closing in. Only it wasn't the curtains, it was me. And how do you feel claustrophobic in your own skin? I was finding out.
Dorina.
Don't call me that.
Dory, then.
Luis Cesar said, his voice deliberately soothing. Like I didn't know what that was, like I wouldn't pick up on a vampire suggestion after half a lifetime of them. Exactly half a life, I thought, my skin going cold despite the hot water pattering down. I had to get out of here.
Dory.
The sharpness of the tone suddenly snapped me back, and I looked dizzily up at a wet master vampire, water dripping off his now dark brown hair, and more drops trembling on his brows and lashes. Louis César, clothed and dry, was stunning. Louis César, naked and wet, could have stopped traffic for a 40-mile stretch. But my panic didn't seem to care.
"What is wrong?"
he demanded, somehow holding on to me despite my current soapy state.
"I told you. I don't remember, and Dorina—"
I stopped to stare around some more, like I expected to find her hanging off the ceiling or something, like a bat. I was losing it.
"She isn't here,"
Louis César told me, the wrinkle a full-on frown now.
"Well, she was a minute ago."
"She wasn't."
"And how would you know?"
I snarled, because he didn't get it. I'd been told I was mad my whole life, but most of the time it hadn't felt like it. Most of the time I'd moved through society. A lot of them, perfectly fine. I talked to people. I contracted work. I handled my shit. Except when she showed up. But even that hadn't been so bad. Okay, that was a lie. It had been fucking terrifying. But at least there were rules. Ones I'd learned to understand, to respect, to keep the scary thing inside me pacified and absent. It hadn't been a perfect system, but it had worked. Until now. Because this wasn't the rule. This wasn't even close to the rule. I didn't go around just losing 15 minutes. Not with no threat in sight, and when I wasn't stressed, when I was the opposite of stressed, happy and warm and clueless, because, of course, the rules had changed. Ever since that barrier in my brain went down, everything had. I didn't know how to control her anymore. I don't know what my face looked like, but Louis César suddenly altered. And then he was hugging me, carefully because of the damned ribs, which shouldn't have helped, which should have made the whole claustrophobic in my own skin thing even worse, but somehow didn't. And I was holding on to him when I should have been getting out of here, but I somehow wasn't.
"She was not here,"
he murmured after a moment.
"You can't know that."
"I can."
He pulled back so that I could see his face.
"I can feel when she's here instead of you. I don't know how to explain it,"
he added, when I started to say something.
"But it's unmistakable. The difference between a sunny day and a dark night. If she had been here, I would know."
"Then how do you explain those 15 minutes?
"I don't remember anything," I realized, "and not just from today."
"What happened last night?"
I asked, my voice suddenly soft and frightened. But I couldn't help it. I was getting flashes, strange and skewed, that didn't make sense. That wasn't how it went, was it?
"You fell,"
Louis César said, his mouth tightening like he wanted to say more but was holding back. I nodded. That much had been memorable. The dizzying fall into nothing, from a height that could turn even a Damphir into hamburger, but hadn't because
those things caught me.
"The Spriggans, yes, but not out of altruism. If you hadn't had that gold, and been clever enough to use it."
He cut off, and then his arms tightened again, as memories whirled about my screwed-up brain. Memories of bouncing around on a sea of fae, like body surfing at a concert, only body surfers don't usually get thrown about that much.
"And then a troll fell on us."
"Two trolls," he said, scowling. "They were fighting and fell together. I managed to brace somewhat, but I didn't reach you in time to do a proper job. Your head still hit the floor. It's likely why you're having trouble remembering things."
I shook the area in question. That wasn't why. and I hadn't forgotten everything after all, because suddenly there were pieces, like of cut-up photographs, crowding my mind. Not of the crazy landing, but of other things. A huge troll, the biggest of them all, racing up a wall. An albino with long white hair stepping through a